The Tampa Bay area is becoming a hub for craft beer, both statewide and nationally, with the highest density of breweries in Florida. The weather is hot, and we're thinking about a cold beer. This is Florida Matters.
Support for Florida Matters comes from the National Foundation for Transplants. Right now, hundreds of Tampa residents need an organ transplant they can't afford. You can join National Foundation for Transplants' Operation Second Chance at transplants.org to learn how to help give someone a second chance at life.
From the Donna Studio at WUSF Public Media, I'm Robin Sessingham. The publication Beer Advocate says Tampa Bay has been on the leading edge of Florida's flood of new breweries for the past decade and says it has a reputation as a creative and ever-evolving beer hub where brewers are supported by open-minded chefs and beer enthusiasts. Here to discuss the craft beer phenomenon with us is Neil Callahan, brand ambassador for Cigar City Brewing. He's also a certified beer judge. Danny Dahm is co-owner of Mastery's Brewery in St. Pete Beach, and Sean Nordquist is executive director of the Florida Brewers Guild. Everybody, welcome to Florida Matters.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for being here. So why is Tampa Bay such a hospitable area for craft breweries? Neil?
I think specific to Cigar City, it came down to timing. We opened up in January 30th, 2009. At the time, there were less than five breweries in the Tampa Bay area for an area of just under 3 million population. So it was really a wide open playing field for beer. And for Wayne, our brewmaster, and Joey, our founder and our CEO, to come in and start brewing beer with special ingredients, with different chili peppers and spices and guava and fruit, there wasn't a whole lot like that happening in the Tampa Bay area at the time.
Sean, do you agree? This was about in 2009 that Cigar City Brewing kind of led the charge for craft brew in Tampa.
Yeah, definitely. They were a catalyst for the entire state. It was right at that sort of sweet spot when craft brewing exploded across the country. You know, it was already popular in a lot of other states, but really the kind of surge that we've seen happened right about that same time. And I think Cigar City was perfectly positioned to ride that out and really led the charge and also sort of broke down a lot of the barriers, because one of the things that makes Tampa Bay and other cities in Florida so hospitable to craft breweries is the local governments, just they get on board. They recognize the economic impact. They recognize the community impact. And Cigar City figured out through a lot of trial and error. The cities didn't know how to do it. They didn't know what they needed. They didn't understand their own processes. And I think Joey and his team around him figured out how to lay that groundwork for a lot of other people.
Well, you could see how that would be confusing for local governments, because is it manufacturing? Is it a manufacturing plant? Is it a restaurant? Is it a bar? How do you regulate something like that? Danny, you have Mastery's Brewery in St. Pete Beach. Mm-hmm. Has it been easy working with local government?
So we have a lot of movement in St. Pete, and we've had our own challenges, but overall we work really closely with the Tampa Bay Beaches Chamber, which does Clearwater all the way down. We've had, you know, hiccups here and there. We had some food truck dilemmas because we don't have food on premise, so we rely, like many other breweries, on food trucks. So that was one of the unanticipated hiccups that we had, but we successfully worked with St. Pete Beach to write a code so that we can have that. And as we're looking to expand, that's one thing that's, you know, really on our radar, is what is the local government like?
What is the difference between craft beer and beer that's mass produced?
If you speak with the Brewers Association, and they're the advocacy group that faces legislators on a national level and on a state level, they define craft beer as small, independent, and traditional. So small is less than 6 million barrels. And really, the only brewery that's even nipping at that number is going to be Boston Beer Company. They brew Sam Adams. Independent means that you're less than 25% owned by an entity that is not itself a craft brewery. So if, for instance, a brewery down the block from us were 30% owned by Miller Coors, they would be out of the club. But if they had a 20% investment, they would still be considered a craft brewery.
Okay. So it kind of gets a little bit complicated, because it's all changing and breweries are expanding and they're getting bought out. But Sean, how large is the market ultimately for craft beer? Because I think it might be a bit different than what people are used to with, say, Budweiser or Corona. A lot of times people think of craft beers having a heavier taste, a more yeasty taste, and I don't know, how big do you think that market will be?
I think we don't know yet. You know, even while the national average of beer drinking actually is getting smaller, you know, I think it lost 1% overall last year. The craft segment of that is growing significantly every year. You know, Florida now has about 250 breweries in the state of Florida, where 10 years ago we had, you know, maybe 20% of that. I think the more people are expanding what they like to eat and drink, and the more they're discovering that just because something, you know, sounds craft, it sounds like, you know, like you said, they have this perception that it's, oh, it's too dark, it's too heavy, it's too this, it's too that. There might be individual beers in the craft world that fall into that, but you could find a really nice Pilsner or lager that is technically the same style as your Bud Miller Coors, but it has a little bit more flavor, and it was made by the guy right down the street. So I think there is definitely a place at the table in the craft world for everybody.
How do you account for this growth?
Oh, I think it goes hand in hand with the growth of people looking for better tasting food. They don't want as many of the chain restaurants. They're willing to pay a little bit more for something that is locally made, something is made by, you know, people who are real artists of what they do. And they want to be part of a community. You know, you go into any tasting room, you go into Mastery's tasting room, there's people from St. Pete Beach who are sitting there, who live there. There's people who are there on vacation. And they're enjoying the tasting room experience, drinking the beer that was made literally on the other side of that wall. In fact, you can see it. If you're sitting at the bar at Mastery's, you can see the brewery right around the corner. And so it's an experience too.
So when a craft brewery gets bought out, Neil, by a corporation, or in this case, a larger conglomerate, Cigar City got bought out by Oscar Blue, which is a conglomerate of small breweries, as I understand it.
So essentially, we partnered up with a brewery collective, which is called Canarchy. It includes Oscar Blues, which is based out in Colorado.
Okay.
It includes Perrin Brewing up in Michigan, two breweries in Utah called Squatters and Wasatch, mm-hmm. a brewery in Texas called Deep Ellum, and a brewery in Los Angeles called Three Weavers. So essentially, it's not that we were bought out. It's not that we sold out. We partnered up. We combined our resources, partly with an investment from a venture capital firm called Fireman Capital. But it's not accurate to say that we were bought out, or that we are owned by somebody, or that we own somebody else, or that someone else is calling the shots. Essentially, the partnership allowed us to grow. We're lucky enough. We've always had the demand for the product. We didn't have the capacity.
Yeah.
The demand was outstripping the capacity. So in partnering up with a larger organization, we were able to add capacity, we were able to brew more beer, and we were able to be a larger organization that could leverage our size for raw materials for distribution. So essentially, it was the approach of strength in numbers, and we found other breweries of the same mind to partner up with.
Is that experience common? I know what happened with Cigar City is it just outgrew itself, right? And Joey Redner said in an interview he needed a big infusion of cash and really didn't want to go into debt, and so this was a good deal for them. Is it going to be the future?
Well, I absolutely feel that way. As the industry starts growing and as more and more breweries get added, Sean touched on it earlier, when we opened up in the Tampa Bay area, less than 5 breweries. We're at a point now in 2018 where just in the Tampa Bay area, we have over 60. So as breweries start to grow, like Cigar City, they're going to find that they need an infusion of capital, or they need capacity, or they need equipment, or they need expertise on raw materials acquisition. So I think more and more breweries are going to find that there is strength in numbers. And 10 years ago, things were very, very binary. 10 years ago, you were either small family-owned brewery like Mastery's, or you were Budweiser. And there was very, very little gray area. Now, as private equity starts to get involved, as other breweries start to partner up, as there's venture capital involved, there's a lot more gray area between being a small mom-and-pop brewery and being a multinational conglomerate.
And what about this organization, Brew Hub, off I-4 in Lakeland? And I think it takes smaller. It's something like that.
Sure. So we had worked with Brew Hub for about 2 years.
Oh, you did?
Essentially, there's no ownership stake that's involved at all. It's essentially contracting out production. Mm-hmm. So we were able to partner up with them, nothing more than just essentially a contract saying, BrewHub agrees to produce a certain amount of beer for Cigar City under the supervision of Cigar City. And legally speaking, even though it's produced at another facility, it's Cigar City's beer. On paper, legally, it is Cigar City
beer. But you didn't
City
have
beer.
To buy all your own equipment. You
Correct.
Could basically rent out their brewing equipment.
Essentially, okay. That's what it is. And that allows a brewery to grow very, very quickly without having to all of a sudden find themselves $1 million in debt on equipment on a new facility. So it's really – it's their tagline is it's where craft brewers come to grow, and that absolutely – it allowed us to grow.
Okay.
And also just to point, they actually are also their own brewery. So they make several lines of their own beer, several of which won medals last year at the Great American Beer Festival.
Okay. Danny, what do you see happening down the road? As you said, you're growing. Do you see selling to a larger corporation? Do you see collaborating with other brewers? What's in store for Masteries, do you think?
Sure. Well, it's hard to say, I mean, sitting here today, but I know we're definitely looking to grow. I think where we are right now is more of a mom-and-pop boutique brewery. We just got into distribution last fall. So really, we're tasting room centric. That's our biggest focus. And we're looking to replicate that maybe in another area that would be welcoming, maybe another beach area, since we already have a lot of relationships up and down the Tampa Bay coast. But we'd also be open to going bigger.
For you, it grew out of the restaurant, right?
Right. We started in our cousin Bernie, which isn't the movie, at CD Roma's in the Tyrone area of St. Pete. And we started as a brew pub. They already had an established restaurant, and Bernie and my husband Matt were homebrewers, and they kind of found each other and converted a space just into a brewing area. And our community, you know, the Tyrone area is not downtown St. Pete. So we had all these breweries blossoming, but then the Tyrone people, and us included, we live in that area, didn't have anywhere cool, that even though we love the beer. And so that really was a hit in the CD Roma's restaurant. And then we knew right away, okay, we have to have our own facility. We have to keep, you know, this going. And it took us a long time to find the right spot. And so we are so happy to be right on the main drag on Blind Pass Road in St. Pete Beach.
I'm Robin Sessingham, and you're listening to Florida Matters. We're taking a short break, and we'll be right back. This is Florida Matters. I'm Robin Sessingham, and we're talking about the booming craft beer business in Tampa Bay. Here in the studio with us is Neil Callahan, brand ambassador for Cigar City Brewing, Danny Dom, co-owner of Masteries Brewery in St. Pete Beach, and Sean Nordquist is executive director of the Florida Brewers Guild. Hops are to beer what grapes are to wine. It's the main flavor in a lot of popular craft beers. Most hops are grown far from Tampa Bay, but researchers are closely watching dozens of hops vines in South Hillsborough County. WUSF's Roberto Roldan has the story.
Simon Boland pulls a hops flower down off of a vine.
So what you're looking for is a little yellow lupulin that hold the aroma, the alpha and beta acids, and the essential oils. Different people experience different aromas. It could be citrusy. It could be earthy.
Boland manages agribusiness development for Hillsborough County. The local government and some University of Florida researchers got involved in growing hops back in 2015, when there were about 50 breweries in Tampa Bay. There are twice as many now.
We got a $100 donation from Cigar City Brewing to buy 9 hops plants that we grew in the greenhouse just to see if it was possible.
Fast forward 3 years, 20-foot-high vines covered in hops flowers are growing in the open air on an acre of research farmland near Waimama. Wooden telephone poles create the backbone of the hops farm. A rope runs from the top of one pole to the other. Researcher Shinsuke Agihara says twine helps the plants on the ground climb up and create a series of hops columns.
When they have full production, you will see all the vines making like a wall.
Agihara says that getting to this point hasn't been easy. Their biggest battle has been against the sun. Hops grow best in the Pacific Northwest states like Washington and Oregon. That's because they need more than 15 hours of sunlight each day to grow. Even though Florida is the sunshine state, Tampa only gets about 13 hours of daylight at most. The solution for researchers is to rig up expensive LED lights that simulate 17-hour days.
So you can see the lights are hanged on the top wire. The lights were on between 5:30 to 11:30 p.m.
The other big challenge for researchers is figuring out what strains of hops will grow best in Florida. Out of the 14 strains they're growing, the variety known as Cascade is doing the best. In that regard, they've lucked out, because it's also the most popular strain among brewers nationally. Well-known craft breweries in Tampa Bay are partners on the research project. They not only provide money, they also provide expertise, visiting the farm and judging some of the hop strains.
I'm getting a hint of mint on there.
Mint?
A little menthol. Yeah. Definitely lemon. Definitely like citrus. Big time citrus.
They're looking for qualities like how much lupulin is inside of the flower. Lupulin is just a fancy name for the pollen that creates the hop's taste.
Oh yeah, dude, definitely four on that lupulin.
Four? Yeah, this is great.
Take it to comment.
Casey Hughes is a head brewer at Coppertail Brewing Company in Tampa. They're partners on the project, and he wants to use some of the Hillsboro hops for a small batch of beer.
Compared to, you know, last year, it's just night and day difference in how much better the hops, the cone size, the aroma, the lupulin production, everything is in them. Some of the hops out here are smelling really good.
Hughes says he wants to buy hops grown in Florida. It would save a lot of money on shipping, but he also doesn't want to alienate his main suppliers.
You know, we're always going to be buying hops from Pacific Northwest. We're always going to be buying hops from New Zealand and Australia. I'd hope to be, you know, soon always buying some hops from Florida too. I think everybody's always excited to see a new hop out of somewhere else to be able to play out of it, and that's something that I think Florida can do pretty well.
For now, researchers don't care if people see made with Hillsboro hops the next time that they buy a craft beer. They just want to prove that a plant meant to grow in the Pacific Northwest can thrive in Tampa Bay and taste good. Roberta Roldan, WUSF 89.7 News.
So you think of hops in places like Germany, such a different climate than Florida. From Roberta's piece, though, it sounds like the research is really coming along. Sean, do you know about the hops in Florida?
Yeah, and it's pretty exciting to see that happening here. For a long time, all you heard was, no, you can't grow hops in Florida.
Well, you wouldn't think
period.
So.
And really,
it's not anything like the Pacific Northwest.
It's not. We don't have that kind of cooler weather. We have the rain, but we also have the humidity, the heat. You wouldn't think that it would work. But that's what these scientists do and these agricultural specialists. They look and see, you know, how can we make this happen here? And not only that, they look at, you know, we've had such issues in the citrus industry because of the citrus canker and the greening and stuff like that. Giving some farmers perhaps an alternative to something that could be done here.
So Neil could be kind of a farm-to-table for beer. Would Cigar City be interested in anything like that?
Oh, absolutely. And we've been working with some of the University of Florida professors and scientists. They're looking at us as a soundboard on what a brewery would look for in hops, what they're looking for chemically out of that hop, what they're looking for flavor and aroma-wise, what they're looking for volume-wise. And that's been sort of the hurdle that I think right now we're trying to jump over is there is a bit of acreage that is devoted to hop growing right now in an experimental phase. The issue is that even with that large, relatively large acreage, the amount of hops that are needed, even to brew a very, very small batch, even one barrel, which is going to be 31 gallons, it's a lot of hops that we need. So we actually brewed our very, very first all-Florida hopped beer. It was on a one-barrel system, so again, just 31 gallons. The amount of hops that are needed, it was a pretty large percentage of what was available to us. So would we be able to brew a beer that would be distributed all over Florida with just Florida-grown hops? Probably not for a number of years, but we're really excited to be able to really get our hands dirty with these hops and see what they're going to taste like in the beer, what they're going to smell like in the beer. Feedback that we can bring back to the farmers and to the folks at University of Florida.
Danny, what's the most popular kind of beer?
Out at our place, it's an IPA. And I think that's because that's what people hear. We get a lot of folks that aren't your typical beer nerds. So they hear IPA, and that's what they want to try. A lot of times they don't like it, and they like our Kolsch or our Hefeweizen, which we're known for, and it's a little more refreshing, especially in the heat of the summer on the beach. But we do a lot of APAs too, American Pale Ales, and we actually did an experimental batch with some Florida hops as well, and we called it the Florida Fresh Hop, and we really sold a lot of it because folks were happy that we were using Florida-grown hops. They had no idea that we could do that. So that was a great seller for us, and it was just a very limited release, like you said.
Sean?
You know, IPA is the most popular craft beer style in the country. I mean,
IPA.
By a very large margin.
Which is the pale yellow.
It's well, and again, you know, color doesn't matter as much.
Okay.
All the color matter means is the type of malt that was used. The IPAs are going to tend to be, and again, it depends on the type of hops used, but they're going to have more of the bitter flavor. But you're also going to get some, depending on the hop, maybe some more like citrus type of flavor.
Where should somebody start if they're used to Budweiser? You know, someone just getting into the craft beer space and they want to taste something, but something that's not too weird, not too bitter.
Starting with something like a brown ale, which is going to be a bit more malty, or start with a blonde ale, look for lagers, look for pilsners. Those are the ones that are going to be most like the mass-produced beer drinkers are used to. And I think they're going to be very pleasantly surprised at what they find. And that's going to open the door to, oh, wow, I really like that. This is craft beer? Well, let me try the next thing. Go for flights. You get a choice of, you know, anywhere from 4 to 6 to however many different beers. But you only get 2 or 3 ounces of each one. And that gives you a chance to try all these different things. Now, you may not like all of them. You probably won't like all of them. But you'll find one in there that you like. And then go with that. And then sort of follow that path.
Sean brings up a wonderful point. We're so lucky in the Tampa Bay area, and really in Florida in general, that there's over 60 breweries in the area, and almost all of them have a tasting room or a tap room where you can go into Mastery's or you can come into Cigar City, talk to the person behind the bar and say, I'm usually a Bud Light drinker. What do you have that's along those lines? And every single time, the person behind the bar is going to be absolutely thrilled to say, oh, great, I've got a beer. Here, try this one, try this one, try this one. You don't like that one? You find it's a little too bitter? Okay, well, let's try this other one. We really have an embarrassment of riches in the Tampa Bay area where you're talking to beer experts in every single tap room, in every single tasting room.
How important is branding, social media, the atmosphere of the brew house? How important are those kinds of things for craft beer sales?
I think that branding and social media and your whole message and your whole feel from online to in person is huge. And maybe that's because that's what Matt and I focus the most of our time on as the owners. We don't hire people to do that. We do that because it's our vision, and it's hard to translate that to somebody to then translate it online or in our staff training. And we hire people that love beer, that want to be here, love our story, know about the beer. They hang out and watch it brewed whenever they can. It's not just somebody looking for a job. We hire beer lovers.
But it can't all be kumbaya. There's got to be a lot of competition. I mean, it's grown so much, and this area can only hold so many brewers. I mean, you can only drink so much beer in a night. So it's got to be a little bit competitive, Sean.
Well, yes, at the end of the day, everybody is competing for tap handles. They're competing for shelf space. They're competing for the consumer's dollars. However, I could not name another industry that you'll have two competitors get together and make a product together, who will attend festivals together and spend the day talking to each other about, this is exactly what I did to make this amazing beer that we're all tasting, and give them the recipe. The camaraderie and the community of the craft beer industry is really unlike any I've ever seen before. That's not to say that everything is always hunky-dory and clean. Of course, you know, everybody is still a person. Of course there's conflicts. And yes, sometimes competition isn't as friendly.
But it does kind of seem like a fun job to have.
Oh, absolutely. I mean,
everyone's nodding.
And I would say anybody who's in the craft beer industry, if they're not having fun, they're doing it wrong. Because generally speaking, people don't get in the craft beer industry to get rich. There are some that do, but by and large, it's an enormous investment of time, of capital, and then more time, and then more capital.
Well, I was going to ask you that. What do you need to start brewing beer for public consumption? Like, how much capital would you need to sell?
I think it depends on the model that you're taking. If you're going to start on a very, very small system and you just want to sell through your tap room, even still, the equipment, the licensing, the deed on the place where you're brewing, you know, $100,000 I think is on the very, very, very low end to start even a very, very small professional brewing operation. There are places that open up right off the bat with $6, $7, $10 million investments even before they've sold an ounce of beer. So there's a lot of different models, but to get in professionally, you've got to have some pretty significant skin in the game.
Okay, and what kind of impact do the breweries have on the local economy? Sean?
You're talking dollar-wise impact on the economy in the tens of millions easily.
I'm talking about statewide in Florida.
Just statewide in Florida. The jobs that are created in the thousands for sure, and that's just directly if you start looking at the secondary and tertiary, then you look at the distributors and the retailers and then the raw materials providers. Just like any other business, you have all these other things that you need to be successful. It's really become another industry of focusing on supporting the brewing industry. Florida has every year increased its ranking in economic impact in the country. In fact, we were somewhere in the middle of the pack just 3 or 4 years ago, and now we're in the top 10.
I just pulled up the Brewers Association. So in 2016, we were ranked number 5 for economic impact of all 50 states. That's $3.1 billion of economic impact directly attributed to craft beer.
Wow. That's a lot.
Billion with a B.
Yeah. So Anheuser-Busch, InBev, I guess that's what's usually brought up when you talk about a big corporation. Is that a threat to craft beer, Neil?
For us, Joey Redner, who's our founder and our CEO, has always really kind of put forth the idea that you're doing more of a disservice to craft beer if you're making bad beer and you're not trying to improve your quality of beer than if you're partnered up with a larger organization like Budweiser or Miller or Coors. So I don't think it's fair to say that what Anheuser-Busch or Miller or Coors or Heineken or Constellation are doing is overall bad for beer in every single circumstance. But to me, Anheuser-Busch, what they're creating is sort of the illusion of choice, where you go into a bar and you see Goose Island and Shock Top and Elysian and Wicked Weed on draft, and you're going, this place has a great craft beer selection. Most consumers don't realize it's all owned by the same company. So in that sense, the illusion of choice, I think, it can be damaging.
Sean?
I would say that there are some business practices with some of the big multinational corporations that definitely have a negative impact on the craft beer industry. They exert an enormous amount of influence over distribution, where they have the money and the power and the connections that the small brewers simply don't. That can mean loss of tap handles in establishments. It can mean loss of shelf space in retail establishments. It could also mean certain establishments will only serve one particular style of products because they're getting special attention from these big ones. And then access to raw materials too, things like grain and hops and all that. They have an enormous amount of influence because of their buying power. They buy, just like they make 100 million barrels to one of the craft breweries, 1,000 or 2,000, they buy that much more grains and hops, which means they have a lot more buying power and control over that of that part of the industry.
I guess that's where you come in, Sean.
That's right.
Your battle. That's Sean Nordquist, Executive Director of the Florida Brewers Guild. We've also been speaking with Danny Dom, the co-owner of Mastery's Brewery in St. Pete Beach, and Neil Callahan, Brand Ambassador for Cigar City Brewing. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks for having
us. Thank you.
And we always want to hear from you. There are lots of ways to reach us. You can tweet us at Florida Matters or leave a comment on WUSF's Facebook page or email us at floridamatters@wusf.org. You'll hear more of this conversation on our podcast, Florida Matters More. You'll find a link to subscribe on our website, wusf.org, or search for Florida Matters More wherever you get your podcast. Florida Matters is a production of WUSF Public Media. The engineer is George Govan. The producer is Stephanie Colombini. I'm Robin Sessingham. Thanks for listening.